Okay, we are recording Crush Interview. Here are your questions.
And
you're
speed.
Recording right now.
Awesome. So we're doing all of them.
You want to read the question?
Tell us about the sacrifices you made preparing for this epic journey. Pretty much sacrificed everything across physical aspect, emotional, financial. I put in pretty much every cent that I had, even though we had some really great sponsors involved, like Carrick Wealth and Island Tribe. Pretty much put every cent on the line. Pretty much my relationship with my partner on the line. A lot of friends that I never saw. I couldn't understand why I never wanted to see them. So I think every single piece of time that I had available for the last 18 months before the project, I was sort of immersed and emerged in that, in the project in every possible way. So yeah, I think I almost had a full meltdown a month or two beforehand. It was just a amount of pressure and stress and strain of putting a project of this magnitude together was pretty incredible. So yeah, it was super tough on every level, I think. And I think a lot of people just don't realize that. I think also my business, put that on the line, having to try and get someone else to look after it, one of my staff members. So yeah, everything was sort of hanging by a thread, and I'm glad it worked out the way it did. Otherwise I would have pretty much lost everything. So yeah, I don't think you can get to a point where you are more, I guess, the definition of being all in and putting it all on the line for something. But I believe that when you believe in something like that, and it's going to have such a positive impact on the world, then you've got to be able to believe in yourself and know that it'll all work out the way it's meant to, and you've got to be prepared to risk it all for what you believe. And that's what this project was really about. Question number two: how does one store enough food on a vessel the size of the hippie fish for sustaining yourself for 93 days? Well, that's an easy one. I like that. Basically, my craft is 19 and a half feet long. It had enough storage space in all the different cabins and compartments and watertight compartments to be able to store enough freeze-dried food for 95 consecutive days. Whole little freeze-dried food ration packs that were duct taped together, and each day was a ration pack that I could take out and eat. And that's how I stored it, you know. I didn't have to worry about fishing, because I was only going to fish if I ran out of food, and I wasn't planning on running out of food. But even if I did, I had a really nice reel and a whole lot of Rapalas, but I didn't want to use them unless I really had to, just to minimize the risk of injuring myself. That was number two. We followed your journey on social media. How important was the virtual connection to the world? I think the virtual connection to the world is probably a lot more important than I initially anticipated. I did the captain's log to be able to inspire people and let people follow on that journey, but I think it ended up being so inspiring and having so many people following the journey that the positive messages that I actually got back from a lot of the posts that I was writing actually ended up helping me and helping inspiring me through a lot of my most difficult times when I was out there. So I think that really was quite poignant how the positive flow of energy and writing and what have you ended up actually coming back to help me in the end, which was pretty cool. What was the most intense experience on the journey? I feel like you guys could answer that question. Most intense experience on the journey was probably when I was stuck in a storm just with the Canary Islands, where my steering had broke. I was on the parachute anchor, didn't have any way to be able to maneuver. I thought I was going to get shipwrecked up against the cliff face on just off the Canary Islands. I had a giant squid or whale that got caught in my parachute anchor, was trying to take me through 6 to 8 meter waves in the middle of the night and 40 knots of breeze and 8 meter surf, and that was pretty terrifying. I'd say that's definitely up there. Biggest craving while at sea?
Burgers.
burgers. Yeah, definitely just I'd say chocolate and probably hamburgers. I think, and I don't normally crave that kind of stuff, which is quite strange because I don't really eat a lot of that stuff normally. But I think when you are burning so much of your body fuel and fat on a daily basis, you know, I was consuming between 8,000 to 10,000 kilocalories a day, and I was taking in that, like a little bit more than that, but your body was burning so much that you're actually eating yourself away actually all the time. So my body was actually breaking down and burning a lot of muscle. So by the time I actually got in, I'd pretty much lost like half a Backstreet Boy and probably a quarter of my weight. So I think your body actually just tells you what it needs. And since I've been back, it pretty much just craves burgers, because burgers are protein, and that's what my body obviously needs to be able to build back up. So it's quite fascinating how your body will always tell you what you need. You just got to be able to listen to it, unless you're out at sea where burgers aren't really available. How did your body cope with essentially not walking for 93 days?
That's interesting.
Oh, it's an interesting question. My body sort of just sustained itself by, well, not walking around. I guess I was standing up all the time, and even though I was walking only 2 to 3 feet a day, six times a day probably. And when you aren't walking around that much, your body doesn't really need to adjust, because I was standing all the time, so you're utilizing all those muscles anyway. So I think the only thing that I've battled with was keeping standing up when I got back to shore, because my sea legs took a little while to wear off. So it felt like I was drunk even before I had a beer, but that didn't take long either, because I'd been without beers for a long period of time. Is it true that most of your paddling was done at night? No, not really. I didn't paddle a hell of a lot at night, even though I thought I was going to, just because it became too dangerous. There were a lot of like rogue waves that used to break over the craft, and most of the time the conditions were more than sort of 10 to 15 knots, which made it quite dangerous at night, especially because my craft was so unstable and so volatile to the elements. So the idea was actually to paddle a hell of a lot at night, but what I found is that I was only paddling at night when the conditions were calm, or when the conditions were under sort of 10 knots, which I got quite a lot of that in the first 2 weeks, but after that it was very seldom that we had those kind of conditions. So I didn't want to fall or damage my feet or damage myself and get swept overboard by rogue waves, which was happening really consistently. So I tried not to paddle at night as much as possible, especially when the conditions were pretty volatile. So I tried to up my ante in the daytime and break my daily shifts down into, you know, 3 to 4 shifts of 3 hours at a time. Hope that helps. For all the aspiring watermen out there, what would you rather do again? Ride 80-foot waves at Mavericks or complete an unsupported transit? Jeez, 80-foot waves, pleasure. Nice thing about surfing is, you know, 60-foot waves plus is that you're in a very, you know, scary place, and if the conditions are really good, then you want to be out there. And you're only going to be out there for 4 to 6 hours, and then you've got this incredible experience, an incredible rush, and then you go back onto land. Whereas the transatlantic unsupported sub crossing, even when you want to get off and you want to stop and you want to go back to land, you're not able to. So you're in a really intense, volatile situation where you are, you know, nervous for your life on a regular basis, but not only for a day or 4 hours or 6 hours. This is for 93 days straight, and that's what made it so intense and so exhausting and draining on every single level, because you've got that intense feeling for such a long period of time. Well, what does one do next after achieving the impossible? Well, once you realize that the impossible is actually possible, which I knew already, then you know that everything else you're wanting to achieve and do is even more possible. So then the world becomes an amazing place, and you think of the most wildest possible dream that you can possibly imagine, and how you can take what you've done and supersize it, and then work out how you can impact and change the lives of not only 3 million but 300 million. And then you know that that's possible because you've just achieved this, and then you go out and take daily steps and actions towards putting that together and making it happen. And in 3 years' time, you'll be asking me what's next, because we will have done the next project. So that's how we do it. And that is around the world. project that we'll be doing in 2020, and you'll have to wait for the details on that, because that is incredible. And most people will tell me that that's impossible too. Looking forward to it already. With that one, I'll definitely have more burgers on board. How do you keep motivated alone at sea? I think, you know, I'm really motivated to just to stay alive. That's a really good motivation. And I say that in jest, but it actually is really good motivation, because when survival is your motivation to get to the other side, then normally it helps you to succeed, because survival is always a great motivator to succeed. And when you are dealing with such life-threatening situations on a regular basis, it does help inspire you to get to the other side. And having a really great purpose and a belief in yourself is a huge motivator, and then having an incredibly powerful why in regarding to your charity aspect or your belief to be able to impact positively on the world or the planet or change the lives of millions of kids like I had, that's probably the most powerful motivator you'll have. And when you take that and you stack it on top of numerous other layers of other motivators, then it pretty much makes most obstacles and challenges easier to deal with and overcome. How did you keep motivated? Same one. Lastly, congratulations on achieving the impossible. Thank you very much. I believe everybody can achieve the impossible if you just believe in yourself and delete the words to cut an impossible out of your world and take daily steps and actions towards your goals and dreams and never give up. You can achieve anything. Chris signing out from the first interview. Hoorah.